In Boston's underworld, he was a ghost and a god. James Whitey Bulger, the ice-eyed mob boss of Southie, ran rackets, silenced witnesses, and orchestrated killings with surgical precision. But the most shocking part wasn't just the violence. It was that he did it all while secretly working for the FBI. For decades, Whitey handed over crumbs on his rivals in exchange for a cloak of protection. The Bureau denied it. Then they covered it up. Then they lost him. He vanished in 1994. For 16 years, he traveled the world, lived under aliases, and evaded capture, while the FBI's own top agents claimed to be searching. When he was finally caught at 81 years old in a California beach town, he looked more like a retired grandfather than America's most wanted. But justice didn't get its clean ending. 1 year into his prison sentence, he was transferred. Hours later, inmates crushed his skull. This isn't just a story about murder and betrayal. It's about the rot at the heart of America's justice system, and how one man manipulated it all. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. The Devil in South Boston. The first thing you noticed about James Whitey Bulger wasn't his size or his voice. It was his eyes. Cold, unreadable, the kind of stare that could stop a man mid-sentence. In the South Boston of the 1970s, a place carved by poverty and Irish blood, that look was enough to command both loyalty and fear. And over the next 2 decades, Whitey would become more than a neighborhood kingpin. He would become a phantom, a myth, and a federal asset hidden in plain sight. Born in 1929 and raised in a working-class project, Bulger learned early how to blend menace with charm. He was a street kid with violent tendencies, robbing banks and running numbers by his teens. After a stint in federal prison, including Alcatraz, he returned to Boston in the late 60s, hardened, ruthless, and hungry for power. But what set him apart wasn't just his willingness to kill. It was his understanding of the system. By the 1970s, Bulger had insinuated himself into the Winter Hill Gang, an Irish-American syndicate in Somerville. He quickly became its most feared enforcer, and eventually its boss, replacing Howie Winter after Winter's imprisonment. But Whitey wasn't content with running gambling rings and extorting loans. He wanted something bigger and more untouchable. That's where the FBI came in. The deal with the Devil Enter, Special Agent John Connolly, another South Boston native, 10 years younger than Whitey and raised on the same streets. Connolly idolized Bulger as a kid. As an FBI agent in the Bureau's Boston office, Connolly saw an opportunity. Use Bulger as an informant against the Italian mafia, specifically the powerful Patriarca crime family. In theory, it made sense. The FBI had long prioritized taking down La Cosa Nostra. Using Bulger's insider knowledge of rival gangs could be a tactical masterstroke. But what the Bureau didn't realize, or willfully ignored, was that Bulger was playing them from the start. He provided just enough information to keep the FBI interested. A few tips about low-level associates, occasionally a useful name. But in return, Connolly and others gave him something far more valuable. Protection. Bulger was warned about wiretaps. He was tipped off to raids. Suspects in his own crew were arrested, but never him. He operated like a crime lord with a federal badge in his back pocket, and the bodies began piling up. The reign of terror. In the late 70s and into the 80s, South Boston became Whitey's kingdom. Anyone who crossed him, or even looked like a threat, was eliminated. Business rivals, suspected informants, even former friends. He didn't always pull the trigger, but his fingerprints were everywhere. Victims were strangled, shot, tortured. One man was buried under a bridge in Dorchester. Another was lured to a house, garroted with piano wire, and buried in the basement. His girlfriend was later killed because she knew too much. Bulger's top enforcer, Stephen the Rifleman Flemmy, was equally lethal, and also an FBI informant. Together, the two men built an empire of blood and silence. Drug dealers paid tribute or vanished. Bookies operated only with Bulger's blessing. The community was kept in a tight, terrifying grip. And yet, to many in Southie, Whitey wasn't a monster. He handed out Thanksgiving turkeys to poor families. He protected the neighborhood from out-of-town gangs. He was seen in church, polite to old women, generous with his cash, a Robin Hood in a leather jacket. But that myth was a mask. Behind the scenes, Bulger was fueling the heroin epidemic and using the FBI as his personal security force. The cracks begin to show. By the early 90s, some agents in the Bureau began to suspect that something was wrong. Why wasn't Bulger being investigated despite mounting evidence? Why were charges against him routinely dropped or delayed? It wasn't just Connolly. Internal memos would later show that multiple FBI agents were either compromised or willfully blind. Tips about Bulger's involvement in murders were dismissed. Wiretaps were mysteriously shut down. Other law enforcement agencies, especially the Massachusetts State Police, grew frustrated. Whenever they got close to nailing Whitey, the case collapsed. And then came the tipping point. In 1994, a joint task force prepared to indict Bulger on a sweeping racketeering case. It would include murder, drug trafficking, extortion, everything. But just days before the sealed indictments were made public, Bulger vanished. Gone. Without a trace. 16 years underground. For the next decade and a half, the FBI claimed it was looking for him. He was added to the FBI's 10 most wanted list, just below Osama bin Laden. A $2 million reward was offered. Flyers were posted worldwide. Agents said they'd missed him by days, sometimes hours, in London, Louisiana, even Thailand. But skeptics weren't buying it. How does a man so infamous, so old, evade global capture for 16 years? How did a fugitive in his 60s travel freely, rent apartments, and draw no attention? The answer, some believe, lies within the Bureau itself. Whispers persisted that retired agents had tipped him off or funneled him cash. Others suggested that the manhunt was deliberately half-hearted, because catching Whitey meant unraveling decades of corruption. Meanwhile, Bulger was living quietly in Santa Monica, California, under the alias Charlie Gasco. He and his longtime girlfriend, Catherine Gregg, posed as retirees. They paid rent in cash, visited local cafes, and kept to themselves. Inside their modest apartment was a cache of weapons, false IDs, and $822,000 in vacuum-sealed bags. They had lived there for years. The capture, when it finally came in June 2011, wasn't the result of an elite task force or a tip from Interpol. It was a tip from a neighbor who recognized Greg from an episode of America's Most Wanted. At 81 years old, Whitey Bulger was taken into custody without a fight. But the story was far from over. Chapter 2: The Trial, the Cover-Up, and the Murder in Prison. The man who entered a Boston courtroom in June 2013 was not the icy mob boss that had once ruled Southie. Whitey Bulger, now frail, grey, and shuffling slightly, stood accused of 19 murders and a laundry list of crimes that spanned nearly half a century. But if anyone expected repentance, they didn't know Whitey. He didn't shrink from the moment. He leaned in. "I'm not a rat," he growled through clenched teeth, staring down prosecutors and former associates alike. "I never squealed on nobody." It was a lie, a final performance from a man who had built his legacy on deception. Because at the heart of the trial, and the public outrage surrounding it, was not just Whitey's brutality. It was the revelation that the US government had enabled it. The explosive testimony. For weeks, the Boston courtroom became a stage for ghosts. Victims' families sat stone-faced as gruesome murders were described in detail. Prosecution witnesses included former hitmen, drug dealers, and FBI agents, some seeking plea deals, others just trying to stay alive. The testimonies painted a picture of a man who murdered with ease, manipulated with brilliance, and ran a criminal enterprise with federal blessing. Stephen the Rifleman, Flemmy, Bulger's longtime associate, delivered perhaps the most damning testimony. He admitted to helping Bulger strangle girlfriends, bury bodies under South Boston homes, and extort millions. But more importantly, he confirmed what many had suspected. Whitey had been an FBI informant for decades, and the Bureau had protected him while he killed. "Whitey had them in his pocket," Flemmy said on the stand. "He gave them info, sure, but they gave him freedom." The betrayal wasn't just personal, it was institutional, the FBI on trial. Though Whitey Bulger was technically the defendant, the trial became an indictment of the FBI itself. Internal memos, surveillance logs, and classified documents were dragged into the light. They showed how agents ignored warnings from other departments, shut down investigations, and retaliated against whistleblowers. Special Agent John Connolly, who had once protected Bulger like a brother, had already been convicted of racketeering and second-degree murder in an unrelated case. But the rot went far deeper. Former Massachusetts state troopers testified about being sidelined. DEA agents described evidence mysteriously disappearing, and relatives of murder victims expressed fury, not just at Bulger, but at the government that had let him run wild. At one point, the mother of Deborah Hussey, one of Bulger's victims, stood up in court and screamed, "He killed my daughter and they let him do it! They let him!" Even the presiding judge seemed unnerved. This case represents one of the most appalling examples of law enforcement corruption in American history, he remarked before sentencing. The verdict. After 2 months of testimony and over 100 witnesses, the jury found Bulger guilty on 31 counts, including 11 murders. He was sentenced to 2 consecutive life terms plus 5 years, but the judgment felt hollow to many. The families of at least 7 murder victims received no official justice. The jury either couldn't reach a verdict or found insufficient evidence. Still, Bulger showed no remorse. He smirked as the sentence was read. He muttered under his breath when victims' families gave impact statements. He even complained to prison staff that the trial had been rigged and that he never had a chance. For a man who'd manipulated the system for decades, the irony was bitter. But the story didn't end with a cell door closing. The prison shuffle Bulger was initially sent to high-security prisons in Florida and Arizona, where he had to be kept isolated due to threats from inmates. He was transferred multiple times for security reasons, each time under heavy scrutiny. Most prisoners in his situation, old, high-profile, and with dozens of enemies, would have been housed in protected custody for life. But in October 2018, without warning, Whitey was moved to USP Hazleton in West Virginia, one of the most dangerous prisons in the federal system. He was placed in general population. Within hours of arriving, he was wheeled into his new unit by prison staff. Less than 12 hours later, he was dead. The murder. The scene was horrific. Bulger was found in the early morning hours, slumped in a corner of his cell, unrecognizable. His eyes had been gouged out, his tongue nearly severed, his head bashed repeatedly with a padlock inside a sock, a prison killing straight out of a mob movie. The suspected killers? At least two inmates with known ties to organized crime, including Fotios Freddy Geas, a former mafia hitman who hated rats. The prison cameras had been mysteriously disabled. The guards had failed to check on Bulger during the crucial window. No one stopped the murder, and no one took responsibility. The FBI launched an investigation. So did the Department of Justice. But as of today, no one has been charged with Bulger's killing. Officials call it an open case. To many, it felt like a hit, sanctioned or not. Even behind bars, Whitey Bulger had made too many enemies, and some of them had long memories. The final irony. In life, Bulger played every side. The mob, the FBI, the public. He survived wars, outlived rivals, and mocked the justice system to its face. But in death, his story exposed something far more terrifying. That in America, the most dangerous criminals aren't always hiding from the law. Sometimes, they're working with it. The federal government enabled a mass murderer to flourish, for years, in exchange for intelligence. They silenced internal critics, covered up evidence, and destroyed families. And when Bulger was finally captured and sentenced, they failed, or allowed, his brutal execution. No apology, no closure, just a name crossed off the list. And one haunting question. If they did it for him, who else have they protected? Where are they now? How did the FBI let him run wild? John Connolly, the FBI agent who helped shield Bulger for years, is now a convicted felon. He was sentenced to 40 years in prison in Florida for second-degree murder after mobsters he protected killed a businessman in 1982. He was released in 2021 due to health concerns. Stephen Flemmy, Bulger's enforcer, is serving life without parole. His cooperation with prosecutors helped convict Whitey, but did nothing to spare him from his own guilt. He remains imprisoned, haunted, reportedly, by the murders he helped carry out. The FBI? After a flurry of internal reviews and superficial reforms, the Bureau moved on. No senior officials were criminally charged. The Boston office remains operational. No one was ever disciplined for allowing Bulger to escape justice for 16 years. As for the US prison system, it has offered no public explanation for how an 89-year-old man was transferred to a high-risk prison and murdered overnight. The last chapter of Whitey Bulger's life was written in blood. But the institutions that helped him live untouchable for so long, they remain unchanged and silent.